Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, and welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. How you doing out there? I am Adam Beebe. I am one of your hosts. And with me, as always, is my hombre, my good pal, my buddy forever and ever, amen, Barry Johnston. How you doing, Barry?
Oh, man, good. That made me feel good. That heart, that warms the heart. Warms the heart.
Well, you know, it's there. You're right there. You're right there. So yeah, man, guess what?
What?
We have a return guest who's not really a return guest.
Yeah. It's interesting because it was supposed to happen and then it didn't happen.
It was supposed to happen early on. We originally interviewed my friend Mike, Mikey, my little man, as I call him. We interviewed my friend Mike 8 months ago, before we even started the podcast on air. And there were some kind of
technical issues.
Difficulties. There were some problems. There was some kind of, you know, whatever. So anyway, we had to reschedule the interview. And as it turns out, it was better that we did this.
Yeah.
Because it went from one story to having two incredible stories.
Oh, man.
This is one of my favorites.
Oh, my God, dude. It is, to say epic would be not even putting it into proper context, to be honest with you. It's just too good. The first story being a little bit more of a creepy story, and the second story just being an absolute hilarious, you know, something that is... you know, something that, you know, somebody could very well stake their reputation on. It's a story that you could build an entire framework for your livelihood. It's just a great story. Great, great story.
There's a spooky one, and there's another one that's just going to sound like some horse shit, but in this case, but it's completely true. And we've got picks. That's what you do in the 21st century. Picks or didn't happen. Well, we got picks. And this is not the other story with the Pixar didn't happen. He sent me a while ago, which we will not include on the podcast. So thank you for joining us, Mike. Mike, what's your weird story?
Hey, so this one is one that, like, I really hadn't thought about a lot until I learned about your podcast and what you were doing and everything. So this is something that happened back in the late 90s, when I was a teenager, maybe like 12 or 13, my dad used to go away for long periods of time in Central Europe, Switzerland and Germany and such. And, he would always come back with some sort of like a souvenir or whatever. And usually it was like, it was chocolate or something like that. Something good. And he started bringing back at one point these marionettes, and so, you know, he'd bring one for my sister, he'd bring one for me. So he'd get me a little boy, he'd get her a little girl, you know, he'd get me like an old man, he'd get her an old woman. And then he came back with a nurse for her, and a Harlequin sort of jester for me. And what made this one a little different than the others is that whereas the others were pretty friendly looking, this one, rather than having pupils in its eyes, it was just black with four dots to make up a little diamond. Really odd sort of look to the thing. But now, they were gorgeous. They're really well made.
Had you expressed at some point in your youth that you had interest in puppeteering, or was this something your father was a career choice your father was trying to put on you at a young age?
I feel like this is one of those sort of like he brought it back probably the first time and it went over reasonably well,
mm-hmm.
and then just kept doing it.
That was his cue. Yeah.
That was his, like, yeah.
He was away long enough that he wasn't sort of understanding that, like, no, bring a Nintendo game, bring something that children play with in this time that we're living in right now.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
that's what dads do.
I don't know. I'm half convinced that your father wanted you to be a puppeteer. So, you know, he had dreams of Jim Henson in his eyes for you.
I think that's it.
And you let him down.
His background in mechanical engineering, mm-hmm. my mother, the nurse, they're like, our child needs to do something impractical.
Right. That's, yeah.
If there's anything that we've learned from having steady work and, roof over our head, is that, well, our child needs to take risks with something that's not even popular. Like, not even popular in entertainment.
To be fair, you didn't half let them down. So,
yeah. Right. Sure. Oh, yeah. No, I found impracticality. I studied literature after all. But you can go around and teach literature, you know, to go ahead and say, like, well, I always have, you know, I can always get a class, you know, thrown together of you know, aspiring puppeteers. That's not quite the same thing.
You say that, but I don't know. But I digress.
And it's not like these weren't like, you know, sweet looking Muppets or anything like that. That's like inviting to a small child where they want to see more. These are things that look like they were, you know, they were carved with like a knife from a block of wood. You know,
pretty rustic.
It was, I mean, they're well done, but like, this isn't Sesame Street. This isn't inviting. Yeah. There's nothing sweet. And less so with, you know, without eyes. I feel like that really draws the audience in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely there on the bazaar. So,
but having it wasn't so much the thing. Like, I guess, you know, we got it and I really wasn't playing with the toys. So, you know, he decided to hang them up in the room, you know, so you could at least get a good look at them. And, you know, until the mood takes you and you have to tell a story through marionettes.
He knew it was coming. He knew.
Sure. Yeah. I had all the pieces that you need, old man, little boy, Harlequin, to tell any story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, I'm sure there's places on the dark net that, that would go over real well. So.
Right. Yeah. Just the three archetypes.
Right.
But like, they were nice enough. It was a nice little, you know, thing in the house, but it's one of those things where like, sometimes you get a gift and, you know, even if it's a child's thing, you're unsure that if you're meant to play with it or if this is really just meant to be decoration. So other people can come by and go, oh, right, a child. I understand the concept. You have some of those.
Yeah.
But so the way that he displayed them in the house was in the corner of my bedroom, he hung them from the ceiling with like a fishing line. Mm-hmm. So at a distance, it just looked like they're sort of suspended in air. Which is fine because, you know, I get fishing line. I know how that works. What was odd about it, though, is while the old man, the little boy, would remain completely static, the Harlequin would turn to different points in the room. And it seemed to me, and, you know, I don't know how many people should have been around, but it seemed to me that it was always facing where I was. So I'd be at my desk, I'd be doing something, and I'd look up and it's facing me. I go to the other part of the room and it's facing me. Every once in a while, I would notice that it's not facing me, only to look up and see it turning in my direction.
Oh, oh man. That's a little unsettling. Yeah.
It creeps me out. It's so good.
But like, and it was one of these things where, you know, I tell my little sister, but I already had sort of a bad habit of trying to frighten her anyway. So there's no reason that she should believe me.
Right.
You know, as soon as I start suggesting, like, well, maybe the doll is possessed, like, then she's like, oh, wait, we've been through this before. fool me seven times,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I, you know, I brought a friend of mine over to show him. And I was like, all right, so it's just like I told you, man. It's, you know, watch. You know, I'm going to walk from the door to the other end of the room, and it's going to follow me, right? And then you're going to do it, and it's going to follow you because, right, it's got to be us opening the door and, like, the AC catching a different path, like a different draft through the room. Or it's got to be, you know, a body moving through the room that's just displacing enough to cause it to just get a little momentum,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't weigh much on the fishing line. You know, it's light wood, whatever. And so my friend was like, all right, well, let's do it. And so he decided that he wanted to go first. So he walked across the room and we waited for like a minute or two and nothing. And so I walked across the room and it turned.
Oh my God.
And
was your friend like, just freaking out, man? Was your friend?
No.
Okay.
Because we were still very much, you know, children of the 80s, 90s, sort of like, you know, shock and horror is just sort of like
yeah.
Now this is happening.
Right. That's great.
There's not that sort of, I don't know. I guess I had an overactive imagination anyway. So I was always living in terror.
Yeah.
You know, at a certain point in the day,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether that meant sort of like you have to turn the lights off at the bottom of a flight of stairs in order to leave a basement. And so you go up those stairs pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Or the, you know, you hear a noise in the middle of the night and it would get bad for me where, you know, you'd hear the noise that was, you know, behind you. If you're facing east, it's west. But I would get paranoid enough to think, no, don't look. It's a trick. You know, whatever's in your room is infiltrated. They're just pitching a rock over there. So you'll look the other way.
Right.
Because absolutely. I fully expected, you know, all right, if I look the other way, I know that when I look over, I won't see it. It won't be till I turn my head back to where it was that it'll be touching me nose to nose.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man.
And so, like, it really, I didn't really complain to my parents about it. I guess I just, you know, I told one of my friends about it, and it just sort of freaked me out. And then one day I came home, and it wasn't in my room anymore, you know? And I didn't think like, oh God, he's loose. You know, I didn't immediately jump to, you know, to that, but I wanted to know sort of what happened. And my parents are like, no, you know, we just made a decision. We're taking this one down. And they didn't
tell me. So it was just the one.
They just took the one down and they didn't, and there was no explanation. Like I hadn't talked to them about it. I hadn't like complained about it. I hadn't like, I chose not to really engage my sister with it. Like some friends saw it. Because I really didn't like, I don't know. Also, I was feeling really weird and uncomfortable anyway. Cause I'm like, you know,
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you think that maybe perhaps one of your parents saw something, do you think that you didn't want to ask because you didn't want your parents to confirm that there's something weird about this one and not the rest of them, just that one?
Well, so you have to sort of like imagine the thing anyway. It's hard to sort of get it. And I guess there is something for whoever is listening. They're sort of probably picturing their own little version of it, you know, whatever, you know, whether it's their own innocuous version or their like overly frightening version of it. But the thing itself was, this very slight sort of like, you know, tall, frail, thin white Duke sort of body, with this, like, the Harlequin checkered, sort of outfit, you know, the red pom poms and the ruffled collar, but, and, you know, red lips. And all it would do is, you know, you can move the hands around, you can move the legs around, and it would, and its sort of trick, is that it had a string that you could pull that would pull the two hands together, and it would offer you like a red rose. And so it was, you know, it was a really like high contrast, really, really interesting looking thing. It wasn't inherently scary, you know, it was just a little off. You know, in the way that something without eyes is a little off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, so I got home that day and I wanted to find out what happened to it. And so I asked my parents and, like, oh, you know what? You know, we were in your room and we were thinking about it and we decided, you know, we're going to get rid of it. Or we put it away. And I asked them, well, what did you do with it? Where'd you put it? And they put it in a chest in the attic. One that I didn't know that we had a chest in the attic. And two, I didn't like the sound of chest in the attic. And so I just sort of left it. I left it there. I went to check on it like years later when I was trying to move, you know, to take it with me with other stuff that I had. And it was gone. And my parents sort of disagree as far as like when they got rid of it or, you know, where it went or this or that. And that's fine. But yeah. it was just this odd little thing, you know, and maybe that's it. Maybe I took like the sort of the lesson of, you know, the protagonist in any of the horror movies where it's, you know, something odd's going on and you don't engage it and you just go on with your life and someone else gets killed. but yeah, that's the weird. That's the closest that I have to anything supernatural. A draft that has been read into, perhaps too much.
So you didn't want to push the issue, so you just kind of let it go. We let the marionette go.
It was one of those where it just
it's
sort of
5 o'clock.
It just sort of did its own. I don't know. It just seemed to carry on the path of least resistance. You know.
So what became of the marionette? I mean, is it still exists? Your parents have it, or is it gone altogether, or what?
It's gone. It's somewhere else. I don't know where.
Wow, crazy, creepy as fuck. Yeah. I wish we had a picture of it. You should ask me. Ask your mom if you got any photos of little Mikey
back in the day
with the marionette. That would be really cool to post up if you had that. So
I'll go dig through the pre-digital photos.
Yes. And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone and there was a policeman on the other side and he said, "We've tracked the phone call and it's coming from inside the house."
Whoa.
Dude,
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV and she turns them around and their face has SpaghettiOs.
Oh man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy?
The hook was hanging from the rear view mirror.
Yeah.
So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they started off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere. All right. So now you've got another story for us. And this is another one of those new areas of Weirdsville. This is more kind of along the lines of it's weird that you pulled this off. It's, I should say, me personally knowing you, it's not weird at all that you pulled this off. But other people hearing this story are just going to be like, no, no, no. It's just beyond. But Like I said, we do have a photographic proof that this actually did happen. So break it down, man.
Okay. So in much the same way that this one sort of gets to a place of like, well, that genuinely is strange, but then doesn't go any farther. Like, should we keep pushing? No, there's nowhere good to push this. I think that, yeah, whoever's listening will certainly understand, like, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, there's certainly a place to knock it off.
Yeah.
So this is many years later. This is, you know, a handful of years ago. And I'm in Istanbul, and where I lived for several years. And, you know, in the way that that a large city, you know, a large international city has people coming in at it and out of it, you know, all the time, you just sort of get used to the fact that there's something big going on, or someone is in town that, you know, you wouldn't expect, you know, yeah, pop stars and world leaders and this sort of thing, big names. And my wife and I were walking back from this area of town called Breakfast Street. We're affectionately called Breakfast Street in that, like, Turkish breakfast culture is its own thing. And it's just breakfast restaurant or breakfast restaurant, breakfast restaurant. And as we're walking back through these places, we're seeing these signs for the ex-president of Uruguay. José Mujica is going to be in Istanbul, or at least his book is going to be in Istanbul with the people who had either edited or co-wrote his memoir with him. We're going to be doing a book talk. And I remembered that I'd seen something on Twitter or this or that, that, you know, that he in fact was heading to Turkey. And I thought, well, what are the odds? You know, like, this is the guy, this is the people's president, right? The guy that he didn't take a salary, you know, he lived incredibly modestly, you know, and although he's, if you're Googling him right now, if you're looking at his face right now, you're going to see like what looks like a very sweet old man, like a very gentle, you know, sort. In his prime, this man was a gorilla. You know, this man was going toe to toe with police and was shot many times. Like, he's had a pretty incredible, you know, harrowing sort of existence, and really, you know, sticks to these, you know, his convictions, and really is, you know, quite a remarkable person. And it's important that you understand that this, you know, how important this man's life is, and how, you know, incredible the things he did over the course of it are, so that you understand what a incredible jackass I am when I
attempt to do whatever it is you're going to do.
When I see his poster and I think, like, oh, well, I have my plans for the day now.
Now, let me describe just the impish glee that has come over Mike's face, because I know where the story goes, because I said, yeah, I want this to be on, and this is going to go some interesting places. So.
I can't wait.
So first off, he's okay. Like, at no point, he was never suspended from a ceiling, nor was he stuffed away in a chest in the attic. He left. He was out of sight, but I'm sure he's fine. You know, he's fine in the sense that when he travels, you know, he has his own security and he has fixers in this city. And, like, you know, he's a very high profile, you know, sort of person. And I don't know how much of that I was considering when I said to my wife, like, hey, look, we need to get to this bookshop. We need to find this place very quickly. But I have to run home to the apartment first because I need to get something. Now, I didn't know what I was gonna do with it. I didn't know why I needed it, but I made a decision that something was going to be made easier. Something was going to be better. I don't know. If I took a rubber horse head with me,
of course,
to in the way where you're living in a foreign country, and you know, your command of the language isn't great.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's nice to have a little something extra.
You got
to
make a statement, man. Yeah. You gotta draw some attention.
Perhaps maybe it'll help you blend in. It depends. You know, I didn't know who was going to show up. I didn't know what to expect. You know, when I got in there, it was this long line of people, all like, you know, very excited to, you know, to hear from him, in the sense that, like, you know, once you're outside of the U.S., people actually have like a concept of what, like, you know, the left of politics actually are. Uh-huh. And so, like, they have like some actual, like, some reverence for this guy. They're really excited to meet him, and they're taking him seriously. I want to take him seriously too. And I've got his book, and I want to read his book, and I want to know what's going on. But I also really, for some reason, I can't shake, the fact that I can be just a real jackass. And so I waited in line patiently with my wife, with the horse head sort of folded up under my arm. And when I saw that it was getting sort of late, and, you know, the line was sort of, you know, was still dragging on. And at some point, this man, you know, he's no spring chicken. He's been on a long international flight. He needs to get some rest, you know.
Yeah.
It'd be kicking, you know, any of our butts if we were pulling those same hours and, you know,
yeah,
transport and all that business. And so I didn't explain anything to my wife. I just told her, wait here in case I need to come back into line. And I engaged his security, and began talking to them, and then got a hold of the fixer that was in charge. I didn't really have any sort of plan of what I was going to say until I was saying it. And I introduced myself and said, so, hey, look, I have been trying to get in touch with some of the team here at the bookshop to help to coordinate this, but, you know, crossed wires and all that. I'm with the EU.
Of course.
A good foot in the door.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm with
them. Sounds legit too. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, people have heard of that. Well, yeah.
I mean,
it's a great big organization.
Only someone from the EU would introduce himself as someone from the EU. I mean, how many people do that in your life? Not many. Only people that would
be involved. I imagine more Europe. Yeah. But
let me throw this in. Here's the thing about Mike, as I've known Mike for several years. He is very much a silver-tongued devil. He can talk his way into or out of just about any situation, and it's mainly because he believes in his own power and abilities to a point of foolishness that he can do these things. And a lot of the times, they work out, and they happen, as you know, you will see. So
I love it.
Yeah, this is, you know, from... You know, Adam and I, our first trip out of the country ever, when we were quite young.
Was this the famous trip to England?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, our first destination out of the U.S.
Was
London. We had gone there. I had a camp
about it.
We spent a good amount of time trying to sort of prove the point that we are too young and too just sort of dopey American to the point where anybody would not want to be unable to answer our questions,
yeah,
or to claim or to show that they are not familiar with something,
yeah,
that we want to know more about or we're asking about, you know, whether it's because everybody wants to just be a good, you know, a good host, to confused looking tourists, or if they you know, just genuinely have a need to answer these questions, whether or not they know actual answers. Yeah. And so we ended up introducing asking people if they knew us. We didn't introduce that, you know, we didn't say, like, do you know me? But we would ask them if they knew about, and then we would give our names. Mm-hmm. Or we'd ask them if they had heard about, like, you know, a tragic demise of my name or his name, or
yes,
or
did you get some good answers?
We got some great ones.
Yeah. Like, and we also it wasn't like we just went up and asked people. We did have a video camera with us, so it was kind of like we were prompting this hey, we're part of you know.
Jay on the street or something.
Right. Like that. We're getting responses. There was something to do with the National Rodeo Convention. There was something to do
morphed pretty quickly. Once it had like sort of turned to the point where it's very likely that one of us was involved in the rodeo, or may in fact have been the Marlboro Man. at some point. By the way, non-smoker. So like there was nothing to, like, but they don't know, because they're hearing the name and they're just imagining. Mm-hmm. But sure, right, the cowboy hats, that all that business. Somehow it morphed into that we were working with the International Rodeo Association, and then asking people flat out if they thought that there was a place for the IRA in London.
That's hilarious. You know?
It's
charming. It's a good thing. Yeah. It's a good thing people didn't really, you know, just take the camera and beat us to death.
This is back when the IRA still meant the Irish Republican Army, so
it still does.
Yeah, but I mean, we were
there's no such thing as the International Rodeo Association. Yeah. Apologies to, of course, the International Rodeo Association. I'm aware that you exist. it was with that sort of nonsense of just, you know, it had to be with something. Acronyms. People like acronyms.
Yes, they do.
Trust acronyms. But then it was sort of, I realized that it was, you know, in introducing myself as a representative of the EU was a big one, but it's such a large organization. It has so many, you know, tributaries or whatever. So who knows?
Yeah.
And so that very quickly turned into like, and you must be looking at this head that I'm carrying with me. Oh, well, let me explain. I'm with a portion of the EU whose focus is education, specifically highlighting luminaries, right? People from politics, people from the arts, people who have really made a change in the world, and really, you know, have been committed and convicted to what they, you know, they believe, and that's why I will photograph myself as a horse with them, so that later I and the other horses, because of course there's many. Right, all over the world, all gathering photographs of ourselves with whomever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
You know, there's somebody in Southeast Asia, you know, Asia, getting photographs with, you know, politicians and pop stars and so on. And there's people, you know, in Brazil doing the same. And here I am in Istanbul, attempting to do this right now.
Ready for my picture.
I'm ready to get a photograph with him, and you know,
it's such a ludicrous idea. it's great because it would work, you know. I mean,
in the same time, and you have to, but it's just you realize, like, being a president, being whatever else, it's a job like anything else. At some point, at the end of the day, it's just an old man. It's an old lady who has been a long day and are having to put up with a lot of nonsense, because clearly I am having some sort of difficulty empathizing with, like, but so I talk to the fixer, and the fixer talks to their security, and they talk to their people, and they talk to their people. And soon I'm speaking with the first lady. Ooh. And she thinks it is wonderful, and she really supports it, and I can't tell if she is that much more clever than I am. I'm assuming that she is.
Yeah.
But she's you know, whether she's that much more clever than I am, I'm assuming that she's that much more clever. But when I you know, I couldn't tell if she was just encouraging this to happen just because she realized what a schmuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
right. and watch me just sort of, you know, show off my judo skills, yeah, and like take this horse's ass and deliver him to my husband so that he can deal with this.
So great.
Right. And part of me really just wants to believe that this is just her, you know, somehow winning an argument they had on the flight there.
Yeah. Like,
you know, so she gives the okay. They wave me over, and nobody was getting photos with him. Nobody was interacting with him. He was, you know, he was laying back and he was, you know, signing some books and saying hi, but there was no interacting with the man. And suddenly, all of his security have sort of like squeezed us together so that and I guess if you see the photo, you'll see, but what looks like an incredible Renaissance portrait of sort of, the line of the first lady leaning over and pointing to indicate to him so that his eye line will notice the large rubber horse standing in a sweater and scarf across from him. And just the look of genuine surprise, as it should be genuine surprise, right?
So speaking of the looks of genuine surprise, Barry, I want you to look at your phone right now.
Oh my God, man. Oh, that's so good. Oh man. Oh. Okay, please go. Continue, man. Continue.
And it's the thing, and like, and there's no like, of course, I it never occurred to me, and I never meant, you know, in any way for any of it to be in like in any sort of disrespect to anyone involved whatsoever. And I could tell by the like, and you can see in the photo like the laughs on some people's faces where like they just don't care.
Yeah. He's looking at you like, what the fuck did I get myself into here, man?
Right. And you have to understand, like, he's coming after Gezi, this huge, like, 4-month period of, like, you know, the entire, like, left of the city going toe-to-toe with the police and, you know, and the center of the town becoming a demilitarized zone. This is shortly before, you know, like, the country has a coup, you know?
Yeah.
So anyone traveling to the country is getting all these, like, these indications that, like, you know, hey, things are iffy right now and, you know, watch out, and there's a power grab from Erdogan and all these other things going on.
Yeah.
And for all the things that they're like legitimate things they had to take seriously.
There's a guy in the freaking,
here's just a
complete, oh my God,
that has decided like, yeah, but this is what I want to do.
But so great. Oh my God.
So we're gonna have that picture for everybody to see on the Instagram.
Picture says
Facebook,
everything you need to know about this.
Oh yeah.
This, yes.
We'll have to watermark the heck out of that one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Because God knows that it deserves to be an oil painting.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. So possessed. Please send the myriad oil paintings too.
Yes, if you're so inspired, and I don't know how you couldn't be, but if you are so inspired to duplicate this in a an oil form, you know, let us know, and we can get you a way to hook up with Mike and so he can adorn his mantle with your artwork, because it is a rare thing of beauty. And an inspirational thing, and a completely absurd.
Oh, man.
So, okay, so you've got this, picture, you've been introduced, I mean, so right now we're at, here is, you know, this former president turning around and seeing you. What goes on from this point?
Well, so it was... We had a quick talk, and it was all really good. But the poor guy, and this just makes it worse. Where like it is one of these things where I cherish the photograph, you know, and I love it, and it's great if I can forget about like all the everything around it.
Yeah, right,
So to appreciate it more, because as I talk to him more, I realize like the poor guy, you know, had clearly, you know, was still tired from the flight, was still, trying to get into the swing of, you know, the time difference and all this. And it really was just one more completely nonsensical thing. If at that point, if the table that he had been sitting at and signing all day stood up and walked away, like, I feel like he would have been like, yep. And now that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, in the way that he could be sort of jaded and apathetic to the point of a 90s child. Like,
I'd like to think that you offered some comedy relief in the middle of some craziness. You know, I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that he may never even think about that thought ever again, you know, but if he may, but
you wonder if it's one of those things where it's like, I'm a serious man with serious problems in my mind.
Right.
Hey, look at that guy.
Right.
He's a fish. Back to what I'm doing.
It's so great, man. It's so great, dude. It's so amazing. What a hell of a story, man. Holy shit, dude.
So good. So good. Oh, yeah. That's, if it didn't have the picture, it just... wouldn't be believable. Absolutely would not be believable. No. But it's there, and it's not Photoshopped. It's the legitimate thing, and
it just adds context to the whole thing, dude.
It's so good. It's so good. So,
wow, man.
Awesome, dude. And that's it. Yes. Go and be inspired, and go and be a colorful schmuck. Be a huge jackass.
Did you just feel like after that was done, like, I fucking did it, man. I pulled one of the great things in my life. It was a moment
I really hope not. I hope that it's not one of those. Like, well, time to hang it up.
That's hilarious.
You know, it's all downhill from here.
It was a highlight, man. It was a highlight, you know.
It's not the, but certainly. I mean, you know, you've dodged lots of bullets. You've pulled off some amazing stunts, and that's definitely one of the top three that I can think of. So
it's one of several that we can talk about on this thing.
And there's also that because number one and number two are certainly things that we can't talk about publicly, you know, because you are,
just in case anyone else is curious, they don't involve misrepresenting myself as a member of any other government
or
it doesn't involve politicians or their security details. Off the top of my head.
Oh man. Awesome. So good.
Well, Mike.
Yeah.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for joining us, man. Thanks for those amazing stories. And yeah, man. So you got anything going on? Anything you want to plug while you're here?
And to plug? No, not at the moment right now. Just I'll let you know if I track down like a ghost hunting kit or something Bigfoot related.
Excellent. Hey, if you can track down a picture of you with the demon doll and mannequin, and so we can bookend the episode with your photographs there, both then and now. So that would be really now-ish, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you just concentrate on it hard enough, it'll find you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's comforting.
that's why it's there. That's why it can offer you a rose.
Oh man.
Don't you feel safer already?
Oh, so much. Well, thanks. All right, thanks again, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe, WHATS -YER. Weird-Weird-Story, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, that's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, What's Your Weird Story, through March 16th, you will get a 15% off coupon on any of your purchases, and they're all really good priced, and they're good quality material. Currently, there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon, so just keep your eyes out for that. And if you decide to get one of our shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors. So, my favorite thing from that is from the second story of the interview. Firstly, the first story was creepy as all get out.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love a demon doll. Yeah. I love a weird thing like that.
Yeah, of course.
It's fantastic. And hopefully, Mike's going to be looking for some pictures. Hopefully, we'll have some of those to set up as well. But what I loved, my favorite thing, dude, is while we're doing the interview and Mike's telling the story, because I had heard a rough version of the story before.
Yeah.
Because we talked and I was like, dude, because he was just telling me it.
Yeah.
He wasn't bringing it to us before the episode. I'm like, no, I want this for the podcast. Yeah. And so he sent me the picture. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. So we're sitting there and we're hearing him tell the story. And then you're sitting there and you're just enjoying, because it's a great story. You're eating it up. Yeah. And I'm waiting. I've got this image downloaded on my phone, and I'm waiting for you to get to a perfect point to hit send, and to be like, bam, and like, this is it right here. This is it. I'm waiting for the horse head to drop, dude. And as soon as it, and it's just like, and I don't, it's language even just set it up perfectly, and then I hit send, and then all of a sudden you cackle out of nowhere, and it's just.
Oh, dude. A
legitimate, true reaction, dude. I mean,
the thing is, Mike's got a way with words, you know, and he's a great storyteller.
Oh, yeah.
And, but to have an image to go along with that, man, is just priceless. And it just absolutely, that picture itself encapsulates everything about that story. The look on his face. As a guy with the horse head standing next to him, and he's trying to figure out what the fuck is going on here. I mean, you can't write a story better than that, dude.
No, it's so good, dude. Mike and I had a lot of adventures, you know, as we alluded to when we went to London, including when we went to the Madame Tussauds wax museum. They had a little horror, you know, kind of like haunted house walkthrough down in the bottom, in the basement, of course, for the tortures and stuff. And somehow, I don't like haunted houses. This may be shocking to our friends. I love hearing all these stories.
Yeah.
I love hearing all this creepy stuff. I don't like the haunted houses.
You don't want to get
I don't
too
like
close.
Being scared.
Yeah.
I don't like people jumping out at me. I have a natural reaction to kind of like defend myself, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. This is not my joy. And it's always been like that. You remember, I remember when we were little, you and some of our other friends would go to these Halloween, legendary Halloween haunted trails and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I would never go
because
it was just too much for me.
Yeah.
Don't like that stuff. Yeah.
I don't blame you.
Mikey talked me into going through this thing. And I'm at the point, like 28 or so, you know, 27, 28 years old.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm a kid. I'm still,
you're a grown man. You're a grown
pretty
man.
Pretty much a grown ass man. Talks me into going through this. And I'm kind of tall, you know, I'm about 6'2" ish, you know, something like that. Mike he's shorter than me. And, so somehow we ended up with a group of four of us, two girls and Mike and me, going through. And I was at the back, and about 10 yards in, all of a sudden I'm at the front, right? I don't know how this happened, but it happened. So anyway, we're walking through, and I'm giggling like a schoolgirl, and I have to point at everything to say, that's real, that's not real. That's a person. That's not a person. So that I can adjust and keep myself from freaking out the whole time
course,
with all these things out at me, anticipating the next monster or whatever. So we go through, and it's not even that long of a deal, but it seemed like it went on forever. And so we go through it, and I'm just like, I'm exhausted because this is taking a lot out of me.
Yeah.
And we get to the other end, and Mike turns to me and he says, "Hey, hold the camera. Videotape me as I jump out and scare everybody after they come out."
Oh, no.
So I'm like, okay. Because I'm thinking, somebody's going to punch my friend,
yeah,
and I'm going to videotape
it. Yeah. So,
not, this is a bad idea. Actually, I probably thought to myself, this is a bad idea, but I'm going to go with it. So anyway, we get out there, and we set up, and so I got the camera focused on people coming out. They can see me plain as day. Here I am, videotaping. So they're thinking, oh, I must be waiting for my friends or whatever. And then all of a sudden, of nowhere, this little goblin jumps out. Ha! Scares them. They're all freaking out. And then they immediately realize it's not somebody in a costume that's part of the exhibit.
Yeah.
It's another patron to the museum. It's another just street person. It's a strange little American man jumping out and yelling, ha! At them.
That's great.
He's fantastic. We did that, and we also knew when we needed to move on, because I think the word started spreading that there are people doing that, so we
shut it down. Dude. That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
it was great. Fantastic.
So he's always been full of mischief, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's great, man.
Well, that was a great story. I mean, hopefully he can come back, and I'm sure he's got more, and, you know, share some more of those crazy ass stories he's got, you know.
I'm sure he's gonna find himself in some more extremely strange, ridiculous situations. Yeah. So that'd be perfect for his little hollow up Weirdsville.
For sure, man. And I hope everybody enjoyed it as much as we did. For sure. It was just such a great story to have on, lighten the mood and really just have fun, you know, and we appreciate him coming on and sharing with us, man.
Yeah, well, thanks again, Mike. I appreciate it, and we do hope to hear from you soon. So thanks, everybody, for listening, for tuning in to the podcast. As always, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your stories, so contact us in our various ways. You know how to get a hold of us by now. If not, look in the little part underneath where you downloaded this. It should have all our contact info, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.